Hello there, Peabody here. Once again, it is time to take another revealing peek back into history.
What famous date shall I set it to today, Mr. Peabody?
All the way back to 2009 and Ruination, the early years.
So, picture this. It's October 2009, and a podcaster just turns on his microphone and casually announces to you his audience that he's currently crowning. Like, he's actively testing his sphincter control live on the air.
Oh, my gosh.
And, you know, while all his polished professional peers in the broadcasting industry are just burning out and quitting in droves, his audience is so fiercely dedicated that they're physically mailing him ceramic jars labeled pig farts.
Right, exactly.
Welcome to Ruination, the early years. I'm King.
And I'm Gail. And, you know, pull up a chair. You're the third person at the table with us today. We're looking at what I can only call a masterclass in how someone takes the absolute mundane minutia of a single life in South Carolina and transforms it into just indispensable daily broadcasting.
Yeah, we're diving specifically into the incredibly chaotic, hilarious, and just highly biological month of October 2009 in the Big Fatty Online, or BFO, universe. Mm. And to set the stage for you, it's the fall of 2009. The mornings are getting a little darker. The shadow of the Great Recession is still hanging over everyone. And, you know, the iPhone 3GS is the brand new must-have status symbol.
Oh, totally. The ultimate flex back then.
You're right. And the BFO community is gearing up for the high holy season of gay Christmas, which is their term for Halloween. But to understand why this specific month is so pivotal, we have to start with the sheer biological reality of how October opens.
He really doesn't hold back.
No, he doesn't ease you into the month at all. He just hits record, freely admits he isn't wearing any pants, and informs you he's broadcasting while actively fighting off a bowel movement because, well, he doesn't want to soil his floor.
Okay, let's unpack this, because it is the absolute weaponization of gastrointestinal distress as content.
Weaponization, I like that.
Yeah, because, you know, he isn't experiencing a technical difficulty or some hot mic moment. This is a deliberate choice to completely shatter the polished podcasting facade.
Yeah.
He tells the audience he is down to a single dose of vegetable fiber, which naturally prompts a desperate immediate run to the local Walmart.
Right. And it's not just a quick, successful trip either.
Mm.
He gets to Walmart and discovers there has been a massive community-wide run on the giant tubs of fiber.
Sold out everywhere.
Exactly. They're completely sold out of his preferred size. And instead of blaming supply chains or, like, inventory management, he completely seriously blames this on the full moon crazies.
The full moon crazies.
Yeah. He essentially suggests to you that a full moon brings out all the overfibers in his local community.
Which is just so funny because the full moon becomes this recurring antagonist for his digestive tract. Mm-hmm. But you also have to look at what he's actively choosing to put into his body during all this.
Oh, the recipes.
Yes. He is sharing recipes with the audience that sound genuinely hazardous to human health. Like, he attempts to make a packaged tortellini soup mix, right? And he realizes he's missing the required can of plain tomato sauce.
Oh.
So instead of stopping, he just substitutes a can of spicy Rotel tomatoes. Like the kind specifically designed for heavy cheese dips.
He eats this intensely concentrated spicy concoction and then reports back to you that it literally burned his eyes.
Burned his eyes.
Burned them.
Yeah.
And it left him completely lethargic, just acting like a sloth for the rest of the day. And I mean, that's not even mentioning the casual breakfast report to something he simply calls shush meat rice.
Oh, shush meat rice.
Yeah, which is a recipe term even he admits probably makes zero sense to anyone outside of his immediate family lore.
Right. But what's fascinating here is that by exposing these incredibly vulnerable, messy, pantless physical states, he is implicitly giving you, the audience, permission to be imperfect in your own life.
I don't know about that.
Really? I mean, he's entirely rejecting the self-importance that was kind of crippling early digital media.
Well, I have to push back on that interpretation just a bit, though, because framing a man broadcasting his impending bowel movements as some sort of profound artistic choice feels like a bit of a stretch. Let's be real. Like, think about leaving the bathroom door open with your closest friends.
Yeah.
Is broadcasting your gastrointestinal distress the digital equivalent of that?
Hmm.
Does it repel casual listeners, or does it instantly forge an unbreakable bond with the hardcore fans? I mean, broadcasting while crowning feels less like a noble pursuit of transparency and more like a cry for help. why didn't this completely destroy his listener base right then and there?
Well, because it operates exactly like hazing in a fraternity.
Hazing.
Yeah, it's an artificial barrier to entry. By forcing the audience to sit through the profound discomfort of his gastrointestinal distress, he weeds out the casual consumers who just wanted a standard sanitized talk show.
Okay, that's a fair point.
Right. Anyone who doesn't immediately hit pause and unsubscribe has essentially survived the hazing. And once you survive that, you are bonded to him. He creates this fortress of intimacy with the diehards who are willing to sit in the virtual room with him at his absolute worst.
Okay, that actually makes perfect sense. It's like an endurance test for the listener. Mm-hmm. But what's really wild is how he balances that extreme biological chaos.
Mm-hmm.
Because he immediately pivots to this rigid, almost pathological system of mathematical precision over the rest of his life. I mean, he's a biological wreck on the microphone, but his numbers, airtight.
Oh, completely airtight. He downloads a brand new application for his iPhone for the sole purpose of telling the audience that on October 6th, 2009, he is exactly 19,415 days old.
Wait, down to the day.
Down to the exact day. And he even projects into the future to announce that on May 14th, 2011, he will hit exactly 20,000 days old. And he applies that exact same obsessive precision to his day job, which he always cynically refers to as the coal mine.
Right. He literally reads his human resources pension statement live on the air. He pinpoints his exact employment duration down to the day. It was 28 years, 9 months, and 21 days as of June.
Yep. But, you know, the absolute holy grail of numbers in the BFO universe isn't his age or his pension.
No, definitely not.
It's the Sunday Publix coupon run.
Oh, the coupon math.
He shares the precise math of his grocery shopping with you like he is a financial analyst reporting on quarterly stock market returns. 1 week, he reports spending $32.75, but only saving $8.71.
A tragedy.
And you can hear the genuine, crushing disappointment in his voice. But then a later week yields a massive, triumphant victory. He spends $66.41 and manages a staggering saving of $40.45.
And don't forget the toilet paper. He scores a 4-pack of recycled toilet paper for a single penny.
A single penny.
A quarter of a cent per roll. So what does this all mean? Why on earth do we care about a stranger's grocery receipt from October 2009? You have to remember the economic context here.
It's 2009?
Exactly. The Great Recession is destroying housing markets, people are losing their jobs, and economic anxiety is just suffocating. In a world where everything feels entirely out of control, saving $40 on ground pork, cube steak, and the good butter is a highly relatable, tangible victory.
It's an illusion of control. The math is his armor.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it.
By tracking every penny, every day he's been alive, and every day he's worked at the coal mine, he creates this grounding mechanism. He builds this mathematical stability because he desperately needs it before subjecting himself to the absolute chaos of his weekend social life.
Right. He puts on that armor before he heads to the horror hotel.
The legendary horror hotel.
Now, for the uninitiated listening at the table here, the horror hotel is the nickname for a massive, highly chaotic, annual LGBTQ+ Columbus Day weekend meetup in Augusta, Georgia. And October 2009 is a massive milestone because it's his first time attending this specific big event without actually having to work it.
He gets to just enjoy it.
Right. He is there purely for pleasure.
And he packs for this wild weekend with the exact same militant precision he uses at the grocery store. I mean, he details his packing list for you. His giant bottle of Tanqueray, no, 10 gin that a fan sent him, plenty of tonic water, and exactly 3 fresh limes.
Not a bag of limes.
No.
Not 2 limes, exactly 3.
Precision.
Yeah. So he arrives in Augusta, gets into his hotel room, and immediately sets up his sling. And for anyone not steeped in the culture, a sling is a suspended leather sex swing.
And he sets this up right in the window of his hotel room.
Right in the window. And he proudly reports back to the audience a steady, bustling stream of what he very politely terms gentleman callers. He even notes with immense pride that one specific caller returned 3 separate times over the weekend.
But the reality of his highly specific digital life hilariously collides with his physical romantic exploits.
Oh, the ringtone.
Yes. He shares a story where he is right in the middle of a romantic encounter in the sling and his iPhone rings. But it isn't a subtle, you know, default marimba ringtone. It's a custom 40-second audio clip he specifically designed.
It's a ringtone that just blares his own voice yelling, "It's not just ruined, it's me, Big Fatty, online."
We're in the middle of
going off right in the middle of a highly intimate moment. I mean, you literally cannot write better comedy than his own digital brand ruining his physical hookup.
Yeah.
But Here's the most telling detail about his dedication to you, the listener. Mm-hmm. He doesn't just experience these wild weekend events. He instantly contextualizes them for the audience. The minute the horror hotel weekend ends, he drives back to his apartment, leaves his car completely packed in the driveway, and his absolute first priority, like before he even unpacks his sling or his remaining limes, mm-hmm. is to record the show and do his Publix grocery run so the audience doesn't miss a single update.
This raises an important question, though, regarding the parasocial contract.
How so?
Well, by reporting everything the exact moment it happens, the audience feels like they went to the horror hotel with him. He takes a private, solo, romantic getaway and effectively turns it into a massive communal vacation. You are sitting there listening to the mundane details of his road trip and the price of his ground pork immediately after hearing the graphic details of his gentleman callers.
It brings you right into the room with him.
Exactly.
And because he brings the audience on vacation with him, the audience physically brings the show right into his apartment. As October closes out, the community celebrates Gay Christmas Halloween.
Yes.
But they don't just dress up in costumes. They celebrate by physically manifesting the show's obscure inside jokes into real, tangible objects.
This is where the audience's deep, almost clinical obsession with bacon reaches a fever pitch. There is an entire convoluted debate over whether National Bacon Day actually falls in September or October.
Which causes widespread confusion across the network.
Right. But regardless of the actual calendar date, the physical mail begins flooding into his apartment, which he calls the Fat Cave.
And here's where it gets really interesting, because the fans are no longer just listening. A listener named Anthony in San Francisco sends a package. It's wrapped in the sports page, but originally concealed in a high-end Louis Vuitton wrapper. Big Fatty opens it on mic, getting packing peanuts absolutely everywhere, and discovers gummy bacon, bacon-flavored toothpicks, and the most bizarre item of all, a ceramic corked jar explicitly labeled pig farts.
Pig farts.
And Anthony actually expects Big Fatty to fill this jar and return it.
And the physical manifestations just keep escalating from there. Another listener, Eric from Seattle, sends a package containing bacon-scented hand and bath soap. Big Fatty openly questions on the air whether he really wants his body to smell like cured breakfast meat before quietly admitting he probably already does.
I mean, he's probably not wrong, but it's not just physical items. It's actual digital production.
Yeah.
Trucker Alex, a prominent community member, actually produces a highly professional, completely fake sponsor advertisement for the show.
Oh, this is brilliant.
He records and edits an audio commercial for a fictional product called Scrotum Scrub. And the ingredients listed in this commercial are steel wool, turpentine, battery acid, and sandpaper. Big Fatty plays the entire commercial on his broadcast as if it were a legitimate paying sponsor. We have to stop and analyze why this is so pioneering. You have to remember the technology of 2009. This is years before Patreon, before Discord servers normalized audience interaction. Making a high-quality audio ad required actual effort and software. It wasn't just firing off a quick tweet.
Exactly. The audience has essentially become his co-producers. They aren't passive consumers sitting back and waiting to be entertained. They are actively writing the lore, purchasing bizarre props, editing audio, and orchestrating the humor. They are feeding the content machine just as much as he is.
But while Big Fatty is sitting in his apartment, surrounded by packing peanuts, opening ceramic jars for pig farts, and playing fake commercials for battery acid scrub, a massive wave of attrition is sweeping through his immediate podcasting network.
Yeah, they called it pod fading. In October 2009, prominent voices in his immediate circle, people like Omar, Wes Stone, and Daniel Beaver, all announced they're quitting the medium.
So dropping out.
Completely overwhelmed, exhausted, and stepping away from the microphone for good.
So why does Big Fatty survive this wave of burnout when all his peers are crashing? Because he absolutely refuses to take the medium or himself seriously.
Not even a little bit.
And the survival tactic is perfectly illustrated by his ongoing, entirely manufactured, highly venomous feud with Auntie Vera, who he affectionately refers to as the Sea Hag.
The feud with Vera is a foundational cornerstone of the BFO universe. And in October, it reaches an incredible peak of absurdity.
Now, we need to be clear here. We aren't here to verify the historical accuracy of the infamous 1978 Turkey incident. We're strictly looking at how Big Fatty used this staggering accusation as content.
Right, right.
Vera goes on her own show and with total dramatic solemnity tells a story from 1978. She claims that Big Fatty came to California for a pristine Christmas Eve dinner at her mother's house. She paints this vivid picture of the beautiful table setting, the expensive china, the massive perfectly roasted turkey.
Setting the scene.
Yeah. And then she claims that right between the hors d'oeuvre and the main course, Big Fatty got incredibly drunk, dropped his pants, and defecated right on the turkey.
It is a wild nuclear accusation to broadcast to the world. But instead of getting defensive, threatening legal action, or writing a serious, angry rebuttal, Big Fatty plays the clip on his show, laughs it off as complete delusional nonsense, and then retaliates in the most elaborate, petty way possible.
He reads a fan-submitted, highly graphic parody of 'Twas the Night Before Christmas. And this poem just brutally mocks Vera. It details her own bodily functions. It mocks her endless RV trips, or the mobile mansion, as they call it, and paints this hilarious, grotesque picture of her waking up from a nightmare about him.
He meets her absurdity with an even greater, more theatrical level of absurdity.
Exactly.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, this is his survival secret. The podcasters who quit in October 2009 were burning out because they were trying to sound professional. They felt the suffocating weight of trying to create important or profound content. Big Fatty makes his show bulletproof against pod fading by replacing self-importance with radical, unapologetic play.
Yeah, he wasn't trying to be profound. He was literally just out of fiber.
Exactly. But in doing so, he accidentally stumbled onto the holy grail of podcasting.
Whether it's leaning into the absolute lunacy of the 1978 turkey incident, proudly reporting that he is exactly 19,415 days old, or giving a highly detailed play-by-play of his vegetable fiber intake, he built a world where the lower the stakes, the higher the entertainment value.
I want to leave you with a final thought to mull over as we close out October 2009. Big Fatty's true genius during this month wasn't just his willingness to overshare his biological reality. It was improving that the most trivial, seemingly insignificant details of our lives, like the overpowering smell of a cinnamon broom stinking up an apartment, or the pure blinding frustration of realizing your brand new iPhone 3G doesn't have voice dialing, those aren't just filler.
Not at all.
Those mundane, everyday frustrations are actually the universal threads that bind a community together in what can otherwise be an incredibly lonely digital age.
When you strip away the polish, the filters, and the NPR voice, you are left with the messy, fiber-obsessed, beautiful reality of actual human connection. Come back next Saturday for another month of Ruination, the early years.
And remember to tune in each Sunday for Ruination Repeat, which recaps last week's current BFO episodes. I'm Gail.
And I'm King. Thanks for pulling up a chair and spending some time in the Fat Cave with us today.
Well, we hope you enjoyed today's trip down memory lane on Ruination, the early years. Join us again next weekend. We'll see you then.